Chapter 79. We finished our lunch without saying more. Then we had pie. Peach, naturally. And coffee. I asked her, "Did the Kellum PR squad come see you?" She nodded. "Just before I came out for lunch." "So you know what's happening tonight."
8 o'clock, she said. "Everyone on best behavior."
"You okay with that?"
"They know the rules. If they stick to them, I won't give them any trouble."
Then the phone rang. Devereaux whipped around and stared at it, as if she had never heard it ring before. Which was possible, I said. "It's for me." I walked over and picked up. It was Monroe. He said, "I have the transportation details, if you're interested. Reed Riley doesn't own a car anymore, as you know. So he's borrowing a plain olive drab staff car. He'll be driving with his father as his only passenger. The motor pool has been told to have the car ready at 8 o'clock exactly."
"Thanks," I said.
"Good to know. Is there a return ETA?"
"There's an 11 o'clock curfew tonight. Unofficial, all done in whispers, but it'll happen. A few beers is authentic, too many is embarrassing. That's the thinking. So people will be leaving town from 10:30 onwards. The senator's plane is scheduled to be wheels up at midnight."
"Good to know," I said again. "Thanks. Has he arrived yet?"
20 minutes ago in an Army Lear."
"Has the hoopla started yet?"
"First pitch in about an hour."
"Will you bring me your interview notes?"
"Why?"
"There are a couple of things I want to check. As soon as the senator looks like he's going to stay put for 10 minutes, would you bring them down to me in the diner?"
Monroe agreed to do that, so I hung up the phone and walked back to the table. But by then Devereaux was already getting up to leave. She said, "I'm sorry, I have to get back to work. I've got a lot to do. I have 3 homicides to solve."
Then she pushed past me and walked out the door. Waiting. I passed some of the time by taking a walk. I looped around the sheriff's department building and entered the acre of beaten earth behind Main Street from the top. The railroad track on my left was silent. The stores and bars on my right were all open, but they had no customers. The bars all had cleaners working in them, all of them black women over 40, all of them bent low over mops and pails, all of them supervised by anxious owners, well aware that a U.S. senator would be passing by and maybe even dropping in. Brannan's was getting more attention than most. Furniture was being moved, refrigerators were being topped off, trash was being hauled out. Even the windows were being wiped. Across the alley from Brannan's, the loan office was doing no business at all. Shauna Lindsay had worked there before she died, and evidently she had been replaced by another young woman, less beautiful, but possibly just as good with her numbers. She was sitting on a high stool behind a counter, with a lit-up Western Union sign behind her head. I had time to kill, so on a whim I went inside. The woman looked up as the door opened, and she smiled like she was happy to see me. Maybe I was the only customer of the day so far. I asked her how the system worked, and after a little back and forth, I understood I could call my bank on the phone and order money to be sent to any such office in America. I would need a password for the bank, and either ID or the same password for the office. This was 1997, remember. Things were still pretty casual back then. I knew there were all kinds of banks close to the Pentagon, because 30,000 people all in one place was a big market to exploit. I decided next time I was in D.C. I would move my account to one of them and find out its phone number and register a password, just in case. I thanked the young woman and moved on to the next place in line, which was a gun shop. I bought spare ammunition for the Beretta, 9mm Parabellums in a box of 20, and a spare magazine to put 15 of them in. I checked that it fit and worked, which it did. Most guys who don't check new equipment are still alive, but by no means all of them. I replaced the round I had put through the skinny runt's head and then I put the gun back in one pocket and the new magazine and the four loose rounds in the other. And that was it for shopping. I didn't need a used stereo, and I didn't need auto parts. So I dog-legged through Janice Chapman's alley and walked back to the diner. The waitress met me at the door and told me she had taken no calls for me. I stood there for a second, unsure, and then I picked up the phone, fed it a quarter, and dialed the Treasury Department switchboard, the same number I had called from the old yellow phone in the Lindsay kitchen. The same woman answered, middle-aged and elegant. She asked,
"How may I direct your inquiry?"
I said, "Joe Reacher's office, please." I heard the same scratching and clicking and the same minute of dead air. Then the young woman, I was sure, wore a plaid skirt and a white sweater, picked up and said,
"Mr. Reacher's office."
I asked, "Is Mr. Reacher there?" She recognized my voice immediately, probably because it was just like Joe's. She said,
"No, I'm sorry. He's not back yet. He's still in Georgia, I think. At least, I hope."
"You sound worried," I said.
"I am, a little."
"Don't be," I said. "Joe's a big boy. He can handle whatever Georgia throws at him. I don't even think he's allergic to peanuts." Then I hung up and walked deep into the room and holed up at the rearmost table for two. I just sat there, waiting for Monroe, counting off the time in my head. Monroe showed up more or less exactly as promised, an hour after our earlier phone call plus 5 minutes for the drive. He parked a plain car on the curb and came in and found me in the gloom at the back of the room. He unbuttoned his top pocket and slid out the slim black notebook I had seen before. He put it on the table and said, "Keep it. No one else is going to want it. No one is saving a permanent place for it in the National Archives." I nodded. "Some colonel just told me there are to be no reminders of recent suspicions." Monroe nodded in turn. "I just got the same speech. And that guy is real mad at you, by the way. Did you offend him somehow?"
"I certainly hope so."
"He's writing a report for Garber."
"We always need toilet paper."
"Plus copies all over. You're going to be famous." He looked straight at me for a second, perhaps regretfully, and then he headed back to his car. I opened the little black book and started to read.